I guess my first question is, did anyone hear anything besides getting on the table last week? And in
I
fact,
heard.
what do you believe getting on the table means?
That science doesn't care about me, so they only want to know about what the universe is doing and don't factor me into things. But I am, you are, we are, we're beings in the universe that are messing with the laws of physics. And to illustrate that, you illustrate with like a cat on a pool table swatting pool balls, which would be pool balls being like the law of physics. The point is, it's my job, our job, to mess with the laws of physics, our job to mess with the universe by living as we truly desire
Say,
to change things.
Andrew, would you do me a favor?
Yes.
Would you stop talking in generic terms and talk only about yourself so that what you're saying, like I use exclamation points like declarations. That means that everything I say is a declaration of me. Well, if you would stop talking in terms of they say that we or I are trying to get it the focus off yourself and speak only of and about you.
Okay. So what I heard last week is that my place in the universe is, or what I'm doing in the universe is, everything I action, the universe reacts, and in that I am changing the, if you want to call it the rules of the universe. I'm changing how it's working by how I work. I think the idea of the kitten on the pool table swatting the balls was to me an analogy for a pattern of how I function in life and in the universe. And I took away from that a sense of myself as a how I live and how I function in my body and in my life is how the universe functions for me.
Okay. Anybody, you want to add to that, Patrick, Karen, or Simone? Well,
So, go.
does anybody understand if I say memory is an analogy for memories?
I could kind of understand that you would say that, but I would like to hear more about how memory of the universe is an analogy for my memories.
Well, take kitten on the table and go from there and answer your own questions.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Yes, yeah, so memory of the universe is like information of the universe just as it is in whole. And for me, I take that
Just
in information and I personalize it. I personalize it by how I choose to live and act and interact that information in my life. And in that, I create my memories, which is a personalized form of memory.
And what way is that a personalized form of memory? I mean,
It's personalized in the way I embody it, the way I act it, the way I live relative to that information, using that information.
you're saying that your memories follow by the way you enact your memory.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Yes, they do.
Well, wait a minute. It's a good, wait a minute. How can you say it's a good point? That you said it. I just repeated it back to you.
Something about the way you said it got me even thinking a little more. Another sort of facet of it. That it follows.
Does it follow then that your life today, which is mostly made up of memories in one way or another, that that you select your provenance or your memory, and that then creates your memories?
Yes. I select my provenance, I select my memory, and that creates my memories.
Well, how does it, you just say the words, what is the action?
The action is an event occurs in life. It's a random event. And I take that random event and I see it and live it relative to the point of reference I'm living. In this particular case, I'll say I'm living loner body self, Andrew, and I have in that a certain set of beliefs and attitudes and ways, and I filter that event through those, and I come up with a, aha, okay, so that's what this is, and that's how I act.
If memory is an analogy for memories, in that, can we say then there should never be any surprises in your life?
I tell you why I don't know. Because I don't know if I know memory until I personalize it. So I'm not aware of an analogy until I personalize.
Well, maybe you personalize it with a self.
Yes.
Then is it possible in all this, so what we're saying is that memory is yourself and you personalize that and act upon that, and that creates memories, but it's all based on memory in the first place. You select your provenance to be is who you are.
Oh, right. Who I am. I gotcha. That I can do. That I always do.
Can you understand analogies are great, are quantum leaps? What does that mean to you?
If I know the analogy, I can make connections to other areas of my life that I don't directly think I know or understand, but the analogy shows me those areas of life clearly.
Well,
and then that's sort of like a quantum leap.
Is it possible then that memories are also an analogy for memory?
That's really great. Yeah, I guess that would go back that way too. Why not?
So analogies can go backwards and forwards.
I would hope so, yeah. That's quite useful.
So memories then, let's assume that for a moment. Is it possible to say that memories are memories of self, not of an event?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that clarifies. You know, actually, that's good, because I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, yeah, memory, as I've imaged it right now, is just so universally generic, I wouldn't know what to, from my memories, truly say about it. But if it's an analogy of self, yes.
So what does holistic mean? Karen, you ought to come in here. What does holistic mean to you?
I don't know. It's not a word I use.
Okay, then
holistic.
Forget it.
Okay.
What does it mean to you, Andrew? Anything?
Well, holistic, I guess by my normal definition is taking, well, like if I, in healthcare, holistic stuff is you take the whole, the body and the person and the, I guess, medicines or whatever, and you try to see how they're all functioning together. The assumption being that they all do work together, and you don't want to just treat with one, you want to treat with all of them. So the word holistic in the terms we're talking about it, I would apply the same way relative to self, relative to memory, universe, and personal self and memories.
Well, holistic by definition emphasizes the whole, like you say, and the interdependence of its parts.
Yet yeah, this, oh, okay, right, interdependence of its parts. Wait.
Yet at the same time, it is declared that a whole cannot be analyzed or known without being reduced to its discrete parts.
Oh, okay.
Well, what?
Well, then that makes analogy a pretty useful tool for understanding the whole. Because if what I know about one part and what I know about another part, assuming they're, you know, either the same by analogy or maybe there's a slightly different bit of information that shows up in another area, I can start making cross references to understand a greater whole.
Or is it possible that you cannot? In other words, if holistic emphasizes the whole, and yet you can't understand the whole except by knowing or analyzing or understanding its discrete parts, then you've destroyed the whole by knowing its parts. So all of this advertising of holistic healing and mind-body stuff is actually contradictory.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Let's say I understand what you mean by breaking the parts down, you lose the qualities of the whole. But isn't that what analogy was offering, was a way to have understanding or access to the quality of the whole through the parts?
No, not necessarily. Analogy was offering something else completely other or different than what you're talking about, and that by seeing the similarities between something that you know and something that you don't know, not within necessarily the same whole, but two separate things, that if there are similarities between parts of two separate things, it's reasonable to assume that there is a similarity between other parts. But that's between two separate things, not necessarily within the whole. Because within the whole is self-defeating.
Self-defeating?
Well, yeah, isn't it too incestuous to know?
To know, I thought that maybe like...
Wait a minute, if you break... If you
available on the whole.
If you break down the parts, how do you know you don't have the whole to know?
That's what I was trying to, yeah, exactly. That's what I was trying to.
So then it's self-defeating. If you can't know a whole except by knowing its discrete parts, if you know its parts, you no longer have the whole.
Okay.
So holistic medicine or holistic healing or holistic understanding of putting everything into a whole, like as in mind-body, in that, then, you've destroyed knowing the whole mind-body.
Can I say something?
And if you tear it down and reduce it to its parts so you can know mind and body, you no longer have the whole.
Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that that they mean...
Oh, by the way, yeah, I said nobody was here. Now somebody's here. The strange voice, Jennifer, is here now. And later on, there might be a more masculine voice. Ken is here too.
Is it possible that when you know the discrete parts and the whole-ism aspect is taking all of those parts into account?
But if I know all the parts of a car, I still don't know it until I put it together. So is it possible then, as we'd say, like an automobile, I can know all the parts, but I don't know the car until I put all the parts together.
Well, exactly.
And then the car is greater than the sum of the parts. So is it possible then, we would say, after I put all the parts together, that I have to be and live in or use the car in order to begin understanding the whole? I can never understand the whole to live, but I can only but in living the whole, only then can I understand the whole.
I see.
Aren't you going to jump in here, Pat, and complain somewhere along the line?
No, I'm putting this together, forming an image as you're talking. And I'm forming an image.
So Raj, I guess what you just said about the car is good in the whole, right? And you gotta live it. I'm thinking like a lot of the things that we've talked about over the last several years, obviously, are in parts. And in parts, I suppose I could sit and misunderstand all of it, but you know, living it, I think that I start understanding it, how it all goes together, how it all functions together, and what that means beyond just what we discussed.
Ooh, wait a minute, little kitten on the table. You just jumped off the table.
How so?
Why? Because you're that was the point of the kitten on the table. You see, what you did is you put the pieces back together to find out the whole so you could find out how it works. No, by working the car, you put the pieces together the way you want it to work.
Oh, right. Okay, right. Right, I see what you mean.
So then the universe works the way you want it to work.
I see.
And what happens if you think or you are thinking only in terms of you've got to discover how the universe works? Like if the kitten up on the table only tries to discover Newton's laws. But Newton's laws don't mean anything. It's how Newton's laws work for you and how you can interfere as the kitten on the table.
All right.
You say, all right, and it just goes down the tube right there.
What's a more appropriate response?
You're expanding on the idea. Are we sitting here? Isn't the whole of this is, and in living it, how you participate in what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if you're just listening to me, you're thinking, well, he's telling me how it goes together. That's not kitten on the table.
I see, right.
So you didn't understand kitten on the table. It's kind of like we do gatherings, and I did all sorts of show and tell crap. And then afterwards, everybody said, oh, I loved your little show and tell. But what did it mean? Well, I don't know what it meant, but I sure loved it. It's like kitten on the table. Well, everybody remembers kitten on the table, but what was it saying? I don't know. But it was cute. Well, okay, we'll just keep on going. You know, I guess I really don't care if you don't understand it. it's your life, and as a kitten on a table, you get to do whatever you want and interfere any way you want. Just, God damn it, don't bitch. Okay. Is it possible that, do you understand, let me put it back again, let me see. Is there, what we're talking about is item number three, which is single-mindedness, self-mindedness. Now, how does this relate? How does holistic relate to single-mindedness? Or is there a thing called oneness or self-mindedness? That's the heading of number three. And I'm trying to get you to understand some things, the authority that you have in life. And I'm trying to get you to use it. Not try to find out what I'm saying. Can't you create your own self-mindedness? Can't you create your own single-mindedness? Shouldn't you?
Yeah, because I guess the single-mindedness I've created so far is the loner self single-mindedness, which is not as I truly desire. I can create one I do truly desire, though, and live that.
How do you do that?
By choosing a self that I would be and live.
What does that mean?
Well, I guess that means choosing a self who I am and acting in that way, like, I mean, to borrow words, how the universe works and doing that.
You don't really understand what you just said, do you?
Probably not.
Pat, do you want to challenge what he just said?
Had to leave the room for a minute.
Karen, do you want to challenge what he just said?
Karen challenges are always interesting.
Okay, say what you just said again.
I knew specifically what we were talking about. I don't know. I said you decide a self that you'll be, a way you'll live life, how you'll function, and you live that. That's not exactly what I said. I don't know exactly what I said. But
that's close enough. What did you say in that?
You choose an identity, a self that you will live, a way that you will live in life, and you live that, you embody it, you personify it.
So if I was to challenge what you just said, I would be questioning you about all this future-based talk, conclusion talk. You choose something that you're going to live and da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, that's an interesting catch.
And what I would challenge you, what about the other self? What did you do with that? Did you trash that?
The loner self?
Yeah.
I guess you use the loner self as a framework for creating, or that's the material for
you're using. You're using my words. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means that the body is, and this loner self is, the medium that I, the material I have for saying, okay, now I will action a new thought. I will action a new action in my life. I will action words and things in certain ways. I do it through my body, essentially.
So you said choose an abiding self. Well, what about you? Would you be willing to continue as Andrew? Like I've asked Pat before, would you continue as Pat? No, no, I don't want to do that.
Right, yeah, I know. See, normally I would say that, and then
what?
Yesterday we had an interesting conversation about if I'm living as I truly desire, why wouldn't I continue Andrew forever and ever? At least that's what I took away. If that's not what you said, that's what I left with.
But I'm asking the question. And all you're doing is coming back throwing questions in here. Would you live, Andrew, eternally?
As I am presently doing it, no.
Would you be willing to live, Andrew, eternally?
Okay, let's say yes.
Then did I say, in talking about an abiding self, did I say anything about go out and murder Andrew and bury him in the backyard?
No, but, you know, honestly, the confusion the thing I'm tripping over in approaching that question is that what I've taken over the last couple of months is everything of loner self and loner body isn't even me. So there's a lot of talk about that. My biggest schooling is that I actually think I am me, and that's what I'm trying to account for.
But what did you say about Andrew a minute ago? You see, this is what I don't understand. You guys use my words, and you don't even understand at all what my words said. You said, use Andrew as a framework for a self. Well, if you use Andrew as a framework for a self that you would live abidingly, are you not living Andrew?
I'll go with that. I didn't ever think of that, but okay, yes.
Well, think of it.
I am thinking of it.
Because all your teachings and religion, science and religion and all that stuff, it has got you to think in terms only of becoming something other. Unite with God
and
you're something else. Be a
living, follow that, yeah.
Being a spiritual being, and but then who are you? And the all of life is screwed up because religion has said, oh, well, you know, there's a heaven, there's another world, there's another self. You aren't you. You should be living this divine being that you are. And then doesn't tell you anything about it. Is it possible that the divine being is Andrew?
That's a big stretch for me.
What does that mean?
But okay.
I would have gone for that until we started talking about loner being, as Andrew just said, isn't you.
But if you use it as a framework and rebuild it in a way of being abiding, then that framework of you or loner being is what you're living.
Mm-hmm.
And your problem has always been, I've always used the framework upon which you build yourself as an abiding being, and you all seem to then always, you got to stop being Andrew in order to be who you truly are. That's what all the teachings say. No, I'm saying, let's morph Andrew into who and what you truly desire. Then you're still living Andrew, but you're living Andrew in a different way.
Oh. Oh, yeah, that's a good clarification. That's right. I know you said it before, now I remember morphing it. Yep.
Well, what did you think regenerate means? You hop, skip, and a jump, and it's regenerated? Or no, you regenerate in terms of your stem cells. You're morphing one step at a time, a little at a time, part of yourself at a time. Every action that you are proud of, every action that you are willing to be and live eternally, that's morphing.
So regenerating one stem cell at a time is morphing.
Yes, what did you think it was?
Morphing. I thought it was creating a new. Yeah,
no, you see, you jump to a conclusion. How are you creating anew? Because in the process of one or two stem cells at a time, or a billion at a time, whatever the case may be, you're half old Andrew, which isn't you, which is loner Andrew, and you're half abiding Andrew. What's wrong with that?
Ouch. Sorry. Nothing's wrong with that.
So, I have a question.
Okay.
Last week we said that I am an abiding being looking for an appropriate relationship with personal beings. Is that the same as we just said now?
Well, you tell me. What does that sound like?
To me, it sounds that the abiding being is looking for a relationship for that framework, as we called it before.
Why do you put it that way? Why can't the abiding being be looking for a framework?
Yes,
in order to be able to then, so then, in that regard, if Andrew uses Andrew as a framework, then his abiding being, in that regard, is looking for an appropriate framework so that abiding being can be personal as Andrew.
Yes. So this is the same as we said last week. That was my question. Yes.
No, but the way you spoke it in that regard, Simone, you separated the two and kept them separate as separate entities. And I don't understand the basis of this is single-mindedness and self-mindedness. Then in that, isn't that putting things together?
Yes.
Well, is it possible then that we have, in our own minds and ways of responding or acting in life and thinking in life, and because of language, we keep eternal and personal as separate and different. We keep particular and universal as separate and different. Can they be separate and different together?
As in our example before, personal Andrew and abiding Andrew.
What about it?
Yes, that would be an example for that together.
But is that singleness? If I talk about a personal Andrew and abiding Andrew, you don't treat that as a singleness. You treat that as two aspects of Andrew. I'm trying to get you to not do that. Language says aspects of Andrew. And then it throws in a third. Andrew is the whole. But you can't know the whole, you can only know the parts, yet the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. How do you get around this conundrum that has been presented to you by language? Are you willing to overcome that and not live one or the other, or one as opposed to the other, but live particular Andrew, abiding Andrew as a singleness? Is there a difference between a singleness and a wholeness? Let's start there.
No.
Well, are you sure?
Yes.
Well, you shouldn't be. Because no matter where you, no matter who you talk to, nobody will agree with you that singleness and wholeness are the same.
She said they're the same.
I'm thinking a wholeness is a bunch of things.
But a singleness is one thing.
Yeah.
Can you live your abiding self and a particular or personal self as one thing, not as two aspects of you?
So as a communion.
What?
As a communion.
Well, I'm talking about now, let's going beyond a communion.
Okay. Well.
Doesn't anybody want to jump in here and either complain or add to it? Because if I move on, I may not come back.
So as I understood last week,
Wait a minute, Simone, do me the favor of, don't talk about last week. You're talking about then what you think I might have said. I don't want to talk about that. I want you to tell me what you think or you believe or you understand. Not talk about what we said last week.
So I understand that that my abiding is the same as Simone in some way.
But wait a minute, I never said that. I told you guys years ago I was going to take everything and tear it apart and so we can talk about it and then we put it back together again. Okay. We've been talking about personal self, eternal self, abiding self, universal self, particular self. Let's put it together into a singleness, if you don't mind. Are you willing to put that back into a singleness? You're living
yes.
yourself in double aspects. And those two aspects are against each other. They're opposing. They're a dichotomy. There are constant struggle in your life. They're physical and spiritual. They're good and bad, right and wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yes.
What's a singleness? How is a singleness different from a oneness?
I don't know.
Is it?
Do you want it to be different? You're the kitten on the table. Do you want it to be different?
Mm-hmm.
You get to use, like I said last week, when I use a word, it means what I mean it to mean, and it doesn't mean anything else other than that, okay? We're using singleness. How do you want to, and oneness?
I want them to be the same thing.
You do.
Sure.
Can you have a oneness that is not interconnectedness, but can you have a singleness that is not interconnected? So maybe singleness allows you to be you and in your own way, and you're not interconnected to Ken and Jennifer and me.
Yeah.
So singleness then is offers you opportunities where oneness means only one, and that means that the environment in which you live, you and the environment are one and the same. You're screwed. Singleness then gives you the right to be yourself in your own way, regardless of all other things. Allow them to be their singleness too.
Yeah, I get it.
You understand that?
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Well, okay.
The singleness is personalized. Is it that?
I didn't hear you, Simone.
Singleness is so personalized.
Well, singleness has to be personalized.
Yes, okay.
Does oneness have to be personalized? Or is it possible that oneness is not personalized?
I think oneness is not, yes.
And then singleness can be personalized?
Right, yeah.
So then self-mindedness is self, then, the personalization of you?
Right, yes. I'll solo again, yeah.
Does this mean that no singleness can be known? If we break singleness down into its parts, we don't have a singleness now. And yet singleness, let's say, can't be known or analyzed unless you break it down into parts. Does that mean that a singleness cannot be known?
I would say that's true.
Well, let me ask you another question then.
Right.
Can a singleness be believed?
Can I believe something without knowing it?
Yes.
Then a singleness can be believed?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can't know yourself, but you can believe yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in an effort to know yourself, you self-destruct what you're trying to understand. You break it down, and in that then you destroy the possibility of knowing anything.
I'll say that again, please.
I said that a singleness can be believed but not known, simply because to know it, you would have to break it down, and the minute you break it down into the parts to know, then you have destroyed the singleness. Now, the possibility, my question is, then, what self, then, in that, forget talking about knowing, what self are you willing to believe? Remember now, what we're saying is, I'm going to get you to think kitten on the table again. There is nothing in believing that prevents you from doing that. There are no laws, rules of the universe or the game of life or anything that restricts that. It plays that way unless you're interfering. Can't your beliefs interfere with all of the laws and rules of life but not interfere with your laws and rules of life?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
But that's the job of the kitten on the table. So, what are you willing to believe? And if you're spending your life trying to find out who you are, or know who you are, or discover who you are, isn't that self-defeating?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Who are you willing to believe yourself to be? Maybe, in fact, the problem is you already know who you believe yourself to be, but that sounds too incredulous to even talk about. And in fact, maybe your problems in life are because You're afraid to live who you believe yourself to be.
Oh.
For instance, let me ask you this question. Simple little question. Can you regenerate an arm? Hell, geckos can regenerate a tail. And roaches can regenerate a leg.
I didn't know that.
There are parts and pieces of animals and insects that completely regrow. Is it possible that you would say to yourself, well, I can't do that. I can't grow my arm because I don't know how to do that. Doesn't how to do that then interfere with your entirely with your believing? Knowing screws up believing?
Really good point.
Then how to do that would be equal to knowing yourself.
No. Yeah. But maybe you can do it just by believing that you can do it.
Yeah, you can do it.
There's been, like, I think documented babies regrowing fingers that have been cut off.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because they don't know that they can't do that. Now, let's go further than that. Can you imagine how different your life would be if you were willing to live your beliefs instead of your knowings?
Without doubt.
Well, yeah, because if you doubt your beliefs or doubt your knowing, then the doubt itself screws it up. Well, let me ask you a question. If you were living your believings, could it be then in that death doesn't occur?
Think about that. If I'm living my believing, then death doesn't occur.
The death only occurs because you know that death occurs.
Right. So I'm functioning that.
So you're killing yourself.
So that's simple?
Yes, it's that simple, as in a gecko regrowing a tail. It's that simple. Let's put it this way. Let me suggest a possibility. You know anything about Kirlian photography? Take a leaf and cut it in half, and then take a picture of it from a Kirlian photography, and you'll see a whole leaf.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you know anything about your etheric body? The etheric body is supposed to be the framework for your physical body. If you lose an arm, the framework is still there, and you can rebuild on the etheric framework of yourself in that regard, a new arm. But you don't believe you can do that. Are you willing to begin believing some of these things about yourself and what you can do?
So I catch a lot of background noise from somebody. There's
my dog drinking, I'll mute.
Oh, thanks.
Is it possible for me to correctly say that nothing can really be known?
Yeah.
Why?
I'll go with that.
Why?
Well, I suppose, in fact, anytime I'm asked how, to know something, I'm going to have to demonstrate it or prove it or something, and I really can't do that.
Hell, you can't know it in the first place, and so why rush off to being challenged to prove it? Why is it that
you mean,
maybe
you're going to ask me how I know, and I really only believe.
So what are you doing? What difference does it make what I'm going to ask you?
I'm trying to clarify your statement. You said I can't know in the first place, so why rush off the proof? What did you mean by that?
Well now, why are you just now, after the struggle going on here, asking me that question?
Oh, you seem like you were struggling with it.
I wasn't struggling with it. To know something
okay,
to be
so
true, to know something to be true, it has to be other than you, objective.
Oh, okay.
Right. Knowing is objective. It is true with or without you, or regardless of you. But you can't know anything regardless of you. But in believing is relative to you, and you can believe anything relative to you, and live that.
Oh, right.
And you can live that. There is no law of Newton or no law of quantum physics that says you can't live that. Are you willing to then, in believing, are you willing to imagine and believe?
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means I imagine. I imagine what I will live, and I believe it by living it.
No. See, what you just did is I imagine what I live, and after that you try to cause it.
Okay. I was thinking not cause it, but...
Wait a minute. It isn't going to do any good. The error was at the first part of the sentence, not the last part. If you correct the first part of the sentence, then cause it or not cause it is a non-issue.
So imagining it in the first place, there's an error in there.
The way you played it, the way you stated it.
All right. Oh, because I said I imagine what I will live.
You see?
Oh.
Now you should be listening to yourself.
Instead of imagining what I am already.
Is that all right?
Greater. It's actually much greater than what I said. Will be is hope to in the future sometime, yeah.
So is that all right?
Yeah. Oh, imagine what I am. That's a world of difference, right there.
Is it possible, then, that that's what you're doing anyway? Since you can't know things without tearing them apart, and if you put them back together again, you can't know anything, is it possible that your whole life is based on imagining and believing?
Yeah, but I don't seem to want to cop to that, so I run off and cause and prove. But yes.
But isn't it possible that you're doing that? You're working against yourself.
Yeah, like what you said earlier, I already believe myself to be, but I am not living that or won't live it.
Are we willing to say that what you imagine and believe, and let's call it, and live, if you believe it, you're probably living it in that regard, that is holistic? And is it possible
say that one more time, please. I missed that.
That what you know, what you imagine and believe is holistic, and what you know is not?
Oh, interesting.
That what you imagine and believe is single-mindedness? What you think you know is not?
Oh, I didn't know that.
You see, you just destroyed yourself by saying, gee, I didn't know that. So you put what I said into a knowing and destroyed it in doing that.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, you can't know it. Mm-hmm. Hey, why don't you cart that down to her and she's down at that computer, it'll take you a minute. And she'd probably appreciate that. Are we okay so far? Well, I guess our idea, this awakening some of these things was a part of last week's kitten on the table concept to show you that there is no, there are no laws that say you can't imagine and then be and live what you imagine. And you're going to say, wait, you're right, I can't do that because I don't know how to do that. And do you understand then that saying, I don't know how to do that, is like what Ken said, putting that doubt in there that screws it all up? Anyway,
yes.
I want to go back to analogies. Is it possible then that analogies are ways of knowing things that you don't know, or analogies are a way to imagine things and that you don't otherwise or can't otherwise know? Is it possible that then instead of destroying what it is you're trying to put together and know, analogies allow you to know without destroying your knowing? Is it possible when I said to you to take every word that I use and create an image, that that's imaging and believing? But you're believing then your images, you're reading your images. Is it possible that imaging in that regard, or imagining, which is imagining, imagining is not fantasy, it's imaging in that regard, that's the self and life you're truly living, and yet as a loner being and everything you think you know about who you are and what it's all about and your life and everything else interferes because it doesn't match up to your believing? Well, okay. Which are you willing to live? What you know or what you believe? So, in terms of an analogy, I don't know how long it'll take to read this, but we won't get to the analogy. This is a story I read before. It's called I Had a Horse. And I read it for everybody. But I want to read it again and then ask you, is it possible that this story is an analogy for something else? This story is about a father and a son during the Manchu dynasty in China. Wang Ping, the father, a very wise man, was extremely proud of his firstborn son, Zhao. and wanting him to grow up great and strong and able, Juan gave his blessed son a horse. Now, you may not think this was an important gift, but it was. For at that time, in that part of China, horses were scarce. And those who had them, well, they were noble men of mark who belonged to the privileged class. And though Juan was not a ruler nor part of the elite, he was a leader in his village. And by giving his son a horse, well, Juan hoped to transfer some of his own power and influence to his younger son. As a small boy, Zhao could barely hang on to his horse. And where the horse went, well, Zhao went. And where the horse wouldn't go, Zhao didn't go either, for he seldom went anywhere without his great horse. And when asked if he was of the elite class, Zhao often replied, "Well, maybe not so mighty, but I do have a horse." Juan intended to personally raise and educate his son. He wanted to teach him discipline, give him love of wisdom and service to others, enlighten him about the gods, and lead him to a purposeful and fulfilling life. Enliven and enrich even his soul, and in general raise him to be the finest son of all, with great privileges and a grand life. But just as he was beginning to instruct Zhao, the prince of the province, impressed Juan into service to fight against several neighboring warriors. And when Juan had to leave his son to grow up the best he could, he had a premonition that, well, he'd not return to see him become a man. Oh, it was a sad, sad day when Juan was dragged away, and dragged he was, for Juan was a gentleman and didn't believe in settling differences by fighting. Well, but if he refused to go, they would cut off his head and enslave his family. Oh, what a terrible choice it was for Juan as he left his precious son and marched off to war. Well, Juan didn't return from the war, so Zhao grew up without his father, and without his father's gentle wisdom and discipline. And being angry that the prince and his warriors had taken his father from him, he constantly struggled against life, and he did battle with individuals. Oh, he fought against the prince and went on raiding parties into neighboring villages. Zhao committed all sorts of atrocities, oh, dreadful things that people at those times often did to one another. If he decided to hurt people or trample them with his mighty horse, he did that. And if he felt it necessary to kill them, well, he did that too. Because he lacked his father's restraint and discipline, and true concern for others, and reverence for life. Zhao, sitting tall on his horse, led his band of men into battle from one province to another, frequently shouting demands at everyone he met. And when his orders were questioned, he often bellowed, "Do it, 'cause I tell you to do it. Don't question me. This is your duty." Zhao readily and loudly issued his opinion on all things, especially about what others should or should not do. And his forages into other provinces and other people's lives continued for many years, during which time, well, he did many brave things and, well, many foolish and inconsiderate things, and unfortunately many terrible things, but he regretted none of this because, well, Zhao had a horse. One day, while campaigning in a neighboring state, Zhao freed several prisoner slaves, and then looking down at them from his position high on his horse, he noticed one particular prisoner who was older than the rest. Yet he seemed more sure of himself. His spirit hadn't been broken. He even smiled, and his eyes sparkled, especially when he looked at Zhao. It was as though he saw clear through Zhao's soul. Maybe he did. There's something familiar about that man, Zhao said quietly to himself. But he turned and rode away. He rode away until he heard someone call his name, Zhao. He quickly reined his horse and turned swiftly, for the horse was accustomed to the quick commands in battle and had learned to respond immediately. Oh, that horse was well trained. Zhao, he heard it again. Son, don't you know me? I'm your father, Wan. Oh, dear son, what a blessed day this is. Zhao could hear his words, but he couldn't tell who was calling him. Surely it must be Ranji, or one of the others, he muttered while looking for his comrades. But no one was nearby. They'd all dismounted under a great shade tree. So, well, Zhao just rode on. Son, the voice repeated, a little louder this time. It's me, Wan, your father. Only then did Zhao realize that the old man was calling him, just as his father had done so many years ago. Father? Father, he shouted as he wheeled his horse, and though he pulled the reins desperately, his horse ran right into the old man, just as he'd been trained to do in battle. The old man was knocked to the ground and nearly trampled, and only Zhao's slight change of direction saved him, for the horse was an obedient charger. Well, you know, it was quite a different Zhao who sat that night listening to how his father had been captured in battle and enslaved for years. Wan was forced to work in the mines. Then he'd been sold as a common laborer in a brick factory, where he was always watched and, well, usually chained, especially at night. All those years, there'd never been a chance to escape and live. And they surely would have killed him. Oh, he'd seen many others killed for even lesser reasons, but regardless of his restriction and confinement, Wan lived as a free man and never despaired. But you, Zhao, tell me, what's your life been like? Oh, I so wanted to be with you to help you and support you. What have you done with your life? Have the gods treated you well? Have you righteously served others? Oh, please tell me, son. Well, Zhao told his father of all the things he'd done, the wise and brave things, the hurtful things, well, and even the terrible things. Oh, it was quite a story, and his father listened in silence. Till finally he asked, are you proud of yourself and your life, son? Are you well pleased with your accomplishments? Of course! I had a horse, Zhao declared boldly. But why did you do all of those things? Well, because I had a horse! You did all those things just because you had a horse? Certainly, Zhao declared righteously. You gave him to me. And those with a horse are expected to do these things. Sun Wan asked, do you always do things merely because, well, because you have a horse, or because you're expected to do them? Shouldn't you discover your own purpose and make your own decision? Shouldn't you become aware of yourself and your choices in life, and then pursue what is right for you and what you truly want? And if you have a horse, can't you use that to the fullest? And if you don't have a horse, can you not pass things by and do something else? Zhao was so stunned at hearing his father speak this way that he could hardly answer. Well, yes, of course, father. But I had a horse, and I was expected to... Sun Wan interrupted. You're a strong lad. Oh, there's no doubt about that. But it seems you have a tendency to justify yourself and continue doing things with great measure and force, no matter what, merely because you have a horse. And whenever I ask, well, why do you do that? You answer, because I had a horse. Are there not greater things than that, O son? Is there not a greater purpose for you than that? Are you pleased and satisfied and happy with your life and actions? Are you satisfied with what you've said and done? Are you fulfilling a worthy purpose? Oh, Father, Zhao answered, I guess there are many things I've done and many things I've learned since they carried you away. There are many things I've seen and experienced. Some were fine, some were terrible. And I felt and known a great deal. And well, I've lived and done everything as honestly and truthfully as I was able. Yes, I did. So I guess I would judge my life as one lived by a very aware and faithful individual. Well, you know, but I truly grieve for you, Father. You did all of those things merely because, well, as you said, I have a horse, and those with a horse are destined to do things that horsemen do? Yes, Father, that's true. But, son, you had a gift and great skills, and because of them, you did things merely because it was your nature or ability to do them? Is that correct? Well, yes, Father, it is. Well, tell me, son. If you did everything in life only because your nature or another compels you to do them, or you have the opportunity to do them, would you be following the very best and finest of yourself, or the lesser aspects of yourself? And would these be strengths or weaknesses? Well, Father, you know, I suppose at times I'd follow the best and the finest, and other times, well, I'd follow the worst of myself. But is that so bad? But, son, why do things merely because it's your nature to do them, or because you can do them? Why do things just, well, because you have the gifts or my horse? Or even the opportunity to do them. Why not take your capabilities, declare what you want to do that's right and fine, and use your talents and gifts and awarenesses in properly doing things? Oh, but Father, if I were to do that, wouldn't I be judging that my decisions are right? How can I be certain what the gods want from me? I'd probably even declare that I was destined to do these things or that I was being led by the gods. Would that be right and proper? How would I know? Son, you've been given many great gifts in life. Oh, well, not my horse. You've been given much greater gifts than that. But, oh, let me take that back and say you've created greater gifts and developed them. It seems that you have astonished many people with your abilities. Oh, son, these are yours to have and use, so how then would you have them be applied? Would you do great things for your country and the gods, or for yourself and others? Would you waste them? Would you give them away simply because, well, because you have a horse? Or would you even be willing to give them away? And if you're willing to offer your special gifts to others, how and in what form would you do that? And why? And what for what purpose? Ask yourself that, son. For were you sincerely willing to give your gifts to others, you'd soon discover you'd not lost them at all, but that in giving them, well, you'd turn a page. In giving them to others, you gained another gift or capability in return, or maybe another belief and awareness, and a greater understanding of yourself. You have many horses, son, and even greater and finer gifts and opportunities and talent, and an extraordinary life. By setting yourself on a course of doing things well, merely because you have a horse, you continue doing the same things over and over and over, merely because you have a horse. But if you purposefully use your gifts and opportunities for the benefit of others, well, you know, the results will astound you. What you gained will be greater and finer than anything you've discovered in the past, and certainly more wondrous than you've ever imagined. Son, stop doing things in life today merely because you have a horse. But Father, I told you these things expecting great praise for all I've accomplished by just having the gift of your horse. I've been so sure. Yes, son, I know. But do you have the strength and wisdom to do things for reasons other than because, well, you have a horse? Or because it appears to be your fate or destiny to do them? Or because you believe the gods speak to you? Do you have the guidance and awareness and assurance? Oh, of course I do, Zhao interrupted. Certainly. Why do you ask, Father? Why do you question me like this? Because there are oh so many wondrous things you can do, son. So why would you ever do things merely because you have a horse? And even if you do things that those who have horses do, couldn't you do them in the way you choose? Do you understand this, son? Certainly, Father, I understand, Zhao answered thoughtfully. And by doing things that way and living as I choose, I know the truth of myself and can, well, live in peace. Just as you did in prison. Oh, yeah, I see that now. Yes, it does seem right. Well, then, son, do that. Try it. And things will be grand beyond your greatest imagination. Oh, and you'll begin joyfully expressing yourself and having the wondrous things you held in and denied yourself simply because, well, you had a horse. Do you understand? Oh, yes, yeah, I do. But, Father, I haven't been unhappy. Oh, I've sought out and found a great deal of satisfaction and pleasures. Oh, some joy, yeah, some real joy. Oh, I've fought. But that's part of life. And I've been brave. Oh, yes, very brave. I'm known for that, and I'm admired, and my men respect me. Oh, some are afraid of me, but that's no matter. It's not important. So, Father, what else is there? I've done all these great things, and I've acquired fine possession. But you have a purpose and a goal in life, son, a grand purpose and goal. And I know you have a sense and awareness of that. Well, maybe you have an image of the goodness and greatness within you. Greatness, of course, I know that, for I have a horse. But son, Juan interrupted, I'm talking about your greatness with or without a horse. And you have a grandeur, son. You're finer and stronger than most people. You're most impressive. Impressive in your own way that, well, they seem to believe or know about themselves. Oh, you've glimpsed these things. You've seen a small part of it now and then, but you had a horse. By doing things merely because they were expected of you, or, well, just because you had a natural ability or gift to do them, you did not fulfill the wondrous purpose or the excellence and fineness within you. Why would you ever want to sacrifice such greatness and do ordinary things, oh son, merely because you have a horse? Seeing or being a part of the wonder within you will transform your life and attitudes completely. And you'll never give it up, no matter what else others offer you or expect of you. But Father, you gave me the horse. What was I supposed to do? You were to discover and express your true fullness and purpose. That's why I gave you the horse. Just as the gods gave you abilities so you could truly express the majesty within you through fulfilling the goals and purposes you sincerely choose in life. Oh, and were you to do that, son, could you ever again forsake your excellence and purpose and magnificence? That's why I gave you the horse. Well, that's just about the end of the story, except to say that Zhao continued doing things in life merely because he had a horse. And he lost his true greatness and joy and fulfillment, and he blamed all of his unhappiness on, well, because he had a horse. And it saddened his father so. Well, dear one, are you proud of your decisions and actions in life? How much of your own joyous excellence are you denying or giving up by simply doing what is expected of you? Or what you have an ability to do? Are you happy and enriched? Or have you failed to make grand choices? Have you forsaken wondrously beneficial and fulfilling and enriching goals in life? Well, failed to fulfill your purposes. As you discovered the true eminence and abilities given to you by your own father, are you afraid of the opinions and judgments of others? Are you unwilling or unable to change? And do you continue doing the same things over and over and over again? Oh, how it saddens your father to see you leading your life so. Merely because you have a horse. Choosing and guiding and fulfilling your grand purpose and goals in life will awaken you and bring the feeling and understanding and image of your true greatness and fineness to life, so you may express the extraordinary wonder and fullness of and majesty within you. Your purpose will nobly and lovingly lead you through your strongest difficulties and guides you to a greater and happier life with newfound strength and assurance and purpose. Oh, you'll be able to see and do things far beyond the ordinary and teach and guide others to do the same. And joy and contentment will be your faithful companion. Oh, son, would you forsake all of that merely because you have an opportunity and an ability to do lesser things? If so, remember Zhao, who led his life in certain ways merely because he had a horse, and when at the end of his life he deeply saddened and unhappy about his unfruitful life of constant struggle, he blamed it on, well, because he had a horse. In that same life, which next week we'll read you another story, can you understand then that that story is an analogy for you in your life today? A very particular analogy for you in your life today? A few days ago, we were down at the Lava Java having breakfast. Well, we weren't really having breakfast. We were having a muffin and coffee. That was breakfast. And there was another guy at the table, and I started him talking, and he was here on the islands from somewhere else because he was singing at a wedding. He wasn't quite sure where his wedding was, but he was singing at a wedding and playing a guitar. Turned out he went on and on and on, which is, you know, talking about his singing and talking about playing his guitar. And I asked him how he gets his gigs, and he said, well, he was, what was the word he used? He was a promoter, but that wasn't the word. So he promoted his own gig, whatever it was. And I asked him a question. Okay, you do all this music and you devoted your life to music and playing guitars, and you play here and you play there and etc. But what is your life all about? Well, he started getting a little testy.
No.
And he wondered why he was being, and I just asked him that question and a couple of other little simple questions. He wondered why he was being interrogated so. I merely asked him a question, but we even discussed the fact that, well, what happens if you can't play and you can't sing? Well, that wasn't up for discussion. I said, well, it was kind of like Julie Andrews who got devastated when she had something went with her vocal cords and she couldn't sing. What happens for you when it turns out you can't sing? Is it possible for you to consider that what your life is all about has nothing to do with what you can do? Because if you can't do that, then what is your life about? Or if you don't do that, then what is your life about? This is kind of what Juan is saying to Zhao. Just because he had a horse. Well, it's kind of like I'm saying to that guy. Just because you can sing and play a guitar, is that what your life is all about? Well, the story here is an analogy for a story that we're going to read next week. And the story next week is, I had a self. And if you have a self, must you do everything just because you have a self, a loner self? Must you do it in that way? Can you not have a loner self and do things that you want to do the way you want to do them, not the way just because you have a loner self it is said that you should or ought to do them? And do you understand that your loner self, like Sal's horse, was given to you by your mother and your father? And must you live that just because, well, just because you have a self that has certain abilities? It's worth considering. Okay, well, if there's no questions, we'll leave you tonight with that. Okay. I guess there's no question.
No, not to think about, though. Thank you very much.
Okay, tune in for next weekend, or next Monday. I had a horse. I had a self. Okay, bye now.
All right, thank you so much.
Bye.